Computers and smartphones and tablets and other technology certainly a part of everybody's life these days. And just the fact that I think today is known as Cyber Monday because of all the online shopping going on is certainly proof of that. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network. Since just about everyone on your holiday gift list uses technology in some way, we're going to get some good tech gift ideas from Peter Green. He's an independent computer consultant, provides great information and resources at Infostar.com, comes by regularly to talk with us about technology and personal computers. And Peter, great to see you, as always.
Always great. Happy holidays, everybody.
Yeah, to you as well.
Thanks.
Smaller computers these days are very popular, and we're talking even smaller than a laptop. Talk about some of the tablets versus what you call, cloud books, the Chromebooks, and also how they compare to laptops and the notebooks and so forth.
Well, you know, if you look at the evolution of the computer and the downsizing of what we've been using all the way to the smartphone, and now you got these iWatch devices that are that are out there too. So that's, a gift idea right there is, the watches that are coming out. Is the downsizing of the computer it has to incorporate some form of storage, and that storage is typically the solid state or the SSD. And what we've seen is an increase in that capacity, an increase in the speed, how fast those are, and they've grown up to the point where people use them in desktop machines and also in some servers. Mm-hmm. But in the smaller devices where they keep the price down to make it attractive, is the storage capacity is not anywhere near what someone would typically put in a laptop or a desktop or a server environment. So you might find, 16, maybe 32 gigabytes of storage, adequate memory to run, applications like word processing, email, web browsing. So those are the things you're going to find in a Chromebook or something in that category that might be made by Sony or some other companies, and also in the tablet form, so like the iPad and some of the Samsung products and Toshiba and so forth. So what you have to really weigh is what are you looking for in an experience in using those devices. Now, for example, when I travel, the most popular games, I should say, for my iPad happen to be Scrabble and Wheel of Fortune. Doesn't require a lot of memory. It's a simple application that's downloaded for playing the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're like maybe $5. And, I can't imagine playing Scrabble, the board game, because of how how interactive the Scrabble, tablet game is.
Sure.
And it's great for traveling, and you pass it around. You don't have a board, and you can't lose the pieces, and they're always accounted for. You don't have to flip them over, and you can quickly go to the next game. But the tablet has smaller storage capacity, so there's limitations in how much you can take with you, how much you can store, because people use it for videos, pictures, music, and so forth.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a jack of all trades, but it doesn't do everything perfectly. But it's great for, certain businesses use it, menu presentations for restaurants. I remember being exposed to that when I traveled in Europe, and all of a sudden you're walking down the street and you've got all these street, open house restaurants, and their presentation for their menu was, we're going to give you an iPad, check it out. And I was like, wow, that's great. And then it started hitting the States that way as well. So the tablet's got its applications, but you have to, what are you really going to use it for? So, you're not going to typically use it for bookkeeping. You're not going to use it for playing sophisticated, interactive games where people are immersed in a world and like EverQuest or some of these other online immersion games, role-playing, for example. But some of the other gift ideas for people that already have these devices and say, well, what can I get them? I know for some people, still having a keyboard is a crutch, or they really feel it's necessary. So a Bluetooth keyboard and a protective case you know, almost turns it into a little notebook.
Mm-hmm.
Bluetooth speakers that can be carried around, you know, for playing videos when you travel, you know, that kind of stuff. And taking it to the next level, you know, if someone's really into gaming, you've got the new gaming systems that are out, but you can also get games for PCs. And upgrades to PCs for gamers are typically video cards with more memory, so that they're faster, the graphics are more vibrant and quicker, and, you know, those can be pretty costly. In some cases, some of the higher-end video cards almost rival the cost of somebody's desktop computer.
Yeah,
they have
amazing
fans on them and how much memory they have. So you have to really check with what the gamer is looking for to get out of, an upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
Multimedia speakers, you know, where you have the woofers and not only just the speakers on the
mm-hmm.
side. You've got surround sound where the numbers, I don't know how familiar people are with the numbers, but 5.1 is typically your four speakers, a center channel. So your front and back pair, the center channel, and then a woofer. And then when you go to the 7 level, you're looking at front, two front, two side, two back, a middle, a woofer, and then sometimes you might have some other speakers involved in the mix, and you can really go pretty crazy with that stuff too.
That's very cool. I was just looking at my own phone, my iPhone, and the case for that.
Yeah, the cases have really gone pretty.
Yeah. Really, pretty cool. My wife got me this for my birthday, but it's a photo mm-hmm. of my wife and daughter and myself.
And it looks like it doesn't scratch.
No, it doesn't. I mean, it's built right into the case. And so I have a lot of people comment on it when they see it. It's
looks very cool.
A nice thing, and maybe $30 or whatever. I don't remember exactly. Well, I frankly don't even know what she paid for
and
it, to be perfectly honest.
And I can tell you, if you know somebody that does not have a case for a smartphone, that is a perfect gift.
Yeah,
because there are so many people I know that I've, you know, gone through the years that have had smartphones that have not had protective cases. And guess who are the ones that have broken smartphones?
Yeah.
Those are the ones they break.
Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest today, talking with him. I'm talking about gifts for the holiday season and also, of course, answering your computer questions. You can give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Do you have a tech gift that you're hoping to get, or maybe you could use a suggestion or two? Do you have a tablet or a netbook or a notebook computer? Does it meet your needs, or do you want maybe a different kind of machine? What's going on with your computer? What do you need Pete's advice on? 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Facebook question from Gail. Seems to be a conflict between keeping everything up to date and if it's not broke, don't fix it. I have a laptop running Windows Vista. Norton antivirus updates automatically. For all other updates, I'm using the if it's not broke, don't fix it approach. Please talk about what to update and what to ignore unless there are issues.
Well, Vista's had problems over the years, and I know you have to be you almost should to me, I would research updates to Vista just to make sure that they're without issues. Norton, any of the antivirus programs that are out there, your system is only protected as good as your update is. So having the most recent update to your antivirus basically means that you have a library or a database that your system calls upon to scan your system and make sure that it's looking for all the latest worms, viruses, trojans, spyware, and so forth that could possibly infiltrate or get into your system. And I've mentioned this so many times that you're never 100% protected because there's always someone out there trying to bang at the door, trying to figure out a way to get in. Once they've identified the latest one, then they update it to their database. So, you know, unfortunately, you know, as far as numbers go, there's always going to be somebody or some small fraction of our online user population that's going to be susceptible to getting infected. And just being current with your antivirus database is very important. But as far as operating systems, right now, to be honest with you, I'm a little skittish with my iOS on my smartphone and iPad. And over the holiday season, you know, the Thanksgiving holiday, I had an issue where my iPhone drained very fast in power and I couldn't recharge it. And then luckily I was able to get it going again. But it seemed to continuous, and I have like three cables and I have three different power adapters, and I was trying every which combination, and it kept saying, hey, you got to plug me in, and it had 1%, and it was fading fast, and I was like,
wow.
And I actually, we plugged it into the car, and it started taking a charge. But one of the things I found online was the fact that the iOS 7 has some issues with battery drain, and I remember earlier last week I had commented like, wow, how the staying power of my phone was so good. And then 3 days later, all of a sudden I was like, how did it go from 100% to like 2% in such a short period of time? So, you know, for me right now, I'm a little bit, you know, step back as far as some of the updates. So, you know, research is good due diligence on, you know, taking care of maintaining your system and seeing if there are any issues with the latest update. Some people are of the camp, you know, I'm going to apply every update to the iOS that there is. And I just can tell you from personal experience and from others that I've seen, you can have problems with updates.
Yeah.
So being the first one on the block to apply the update is not always the best thing in my book.
Peter Green of InfoStar.com, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening in on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest computer consultant, Peter Green, talking about holiday gifts in the computer area and the software area, but also you may have a problem with your computer or your software. Give us a call, 800-642-1234. Ron in Eau Claire has a question for you, Pete. Hi, Ron. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. My question is, I've got high-speed DSL right now through my phone company, and it's a good company, but I'm paying like $80 a month for it. And when it comes to my wife and myself, my daughter on our computer, you know, it's, you know, okay, eBay, stuff like this, Craigslist, no business, no major things on it. And we have a laptop. And I guess my question is I've been kind of looking for a different provider, and I found one that, and I'll tell you, it's HughesNet, $200 up front, $40 a month with no contract. And I guess my question is there something I'm missing, or if it's somebody like me that doesn't have the major business and I don't download movies, am I safe to make the switch?
From what I understand, you said HughesNet, correct?
Correct, yeah.
I believe is it satellite-based?
Yes.
Yeah. You'll probably have limited speed, you know, as far as connectivity versus what you're using with DSL. Do you happen to know what your speed is with DSL?
My speed right now with DSL is 3. Now, HughesNet claims to be 10.
Uh-huh. Okay. Do you have any cable providers in your area? Are you in an area where you might get like Roadrunner or in I know in the Madison area and surrounding is Charter?
No.
Yeah. So you have no cable access?
No.
How about,
no.
I know AT&T is promoting UVerse. Any possibility with them?
Nope, I'm out in rural area. So.
Okay.
Provider is pretty much it.
Yeah. The only other suggestion might be to check with a cell provider that might offer internet service through their cell. Might be a possibility.
Okay.
So I would check with the different cell providers and see if they have some options. I know it's something that's recently, within the last probably 2-3 years, I know in southern Wisconsin that's grown in popularity. You know, I don't know what's going on in your area.
So are you discouraging Ron from going with this other?
Well, I mean, the cost to me is pretty high. You know, 80 for, you know, 3 meg speed is way up there.
But the other thing that he's looking at is 10?
Yeah, he's saying 10. I didn't realize they had bumped the speed up to that high. That's
their claim. Well, that's their claim.
That's their claim.
So much faster than what I have right now.
Yeah, I love the claim part because you got to be careful with that. I know with my experience with the claim part is I had a provider in Madison and it was DSL and they claimed a certain speed and I was lucky if I got almost half and it was pretty inconsistent and had many technicians try to troubleshoot it to improve it. And I did get refunded some money on a monthly basis for a period of time, but you know, because of how I fought their claim and where it was really at. But it would be nice to see proof or, you know, someone in the area experiencing the same speeds that they're claiming, because they usually have a little fine print that says, you know, up to, but not, you know, guaranteed that you will receive this speed. So you might want to look at the fine print on that and ask them what, you know, what is your refund, you know, to get out of it and get your money back.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Ron. Laura in Madison, it is your turn. Hi, Laura.
Oh, thanks so much.
Hi.
I am starting a small online business where people will order things over my website. And I want to make sure that when people email me or with questions, you know, about products and things, mm-hmm. that I have some kind of small device that I can take with me wherever I go so I can, you know, retrieve those. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's a smartphone or if that's a tablet that I should get. I'm a little older, mm-hmm. so I'd like something with a pretty, you know, big screen and pretty big buttons.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I assume I want them to be able to contact me by phone as well as email, and I don't know that the tablets have phones, so I wonder if you could tell me what's probably the best thing for someone in my situation.
Well, in terms of you receiving notification about orders coming through, you know, via email, you'd probably want them sent to a web-based email, which would be something like Gmail, where you could leave it up in the internet, the cloud, as they call it. And then also you can download those messages to a desktop PC at your house or your office, as well as any tablet or smartphone. As far as, you know, a device to take it with you, some of the, like Samsung puts out a larger phone that they call, I think it's like the Galaxy Note, and they have different versions of it, you know, in terms of cost and size. But they're bigger than an iPhone, and I've told people I consider them almost like iPad killers because they've got the function of the phone. They're just big enough to be a usable tablet, but small enough to carry with you and be more portable.
Yeah.
So people that have them tend to use their iPad less. Or their larger tablet less because you've got this tablet environment in front of you with everything else.
Okay, great. And if a customer emails me a question about a product, if it goes normally to my main computer, can I hook up my Samsung to make the messages forward to my mobile device?
Sure. And there are even applications out there that will allow you to translate your email to a voice, you know, voice, so you could, or same thing with someone leaves you a phone message and it could be translated to text for you. There are applications out there that do that.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks a lot. Good luck with your business. Appreciate your call. You can join in too. Here's the number, 1-800-642-1234. Larry and Delavan. Thanks for calling. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
I have a question. I use AVG for AVG-free for a antivirus.
Okay.
And I absolutely love it. What I'm wondering is, are there any free PC maintenance programs out there?
Yes.
I'll say they're free, but then whenever you download it, and then they say, okay, well, we'll sell you a copy.
Right.
And so the problem is I have like three computers. They're all running Windows 7.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, would it cost me like $150 to have coverage for all those? Or, Is there something that's portable? So you
There's one that's popular. It's called Sea Cleaner. So it's spelled C and then C-L-E-A-N-E-R. And the company is Piriforms, P-I-R-I-F-O-R-M-S. And you can do a Google search on that. And the software you can download is free. They kind of explain to you the features, and there are some links there where you can either elect to donate them money or choose not to. You can still get the software. And then there might be like an upgraded version that might have another feature to add it. You'll just have to read what how they present it on their website. And they have some other useful... Then.
Go ahead. That's Sea Cleaner?
Yep.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. And that's Piriforms?
P-I-R-I-F-O-R-M-S.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. John in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, it is your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yes, thanks. Pete, I'm green with envy because of your knowledge. Appreciate your time. Two quick questions. Is there any Wi-Fi amplifier that you would recommend? I'd like to get the signal in a guest house, and it's a little bit weak. Is that are those gimmicks, or do they work?
I'd say within the last 12, 18 months, I've seen a lot more of these amplification devices coming out. I've worked with what they call them, D-Link products and Netgear products. And then, if you really want to go all out, what I would probably do is do a lookup on a company called Ingenious, E-N-G-E-N-I-U-S. And when you start to look for their products, look and read the reviews and then see. Do some shopping and go to like sites like buy.com, tiger.com, cnet.com, and look and see what some other people might be using for alternative products, because they have a lot of different classes of how far you want to extend your signal and amplification and what you're looking for. So I know for a fact that company makes products that would be used in like an airport environment or a campus environment where they really want to extend the signal in multiple directions. So they put these amplifiers out strategically located, and they may also use some point-to-point antennas that actually have no obstruction of the signal. So you can actually go from point to point and extend a network for, let's say, 30 miles because there's absolutely nothing in the way, and one antenna is pointing to another, and it's just propagating that signal, and then you're using a Wi-Fi access point like a company like Ingenious or D-Link or Netgear, and allows you to propagate that Wi-Fi signal to another place.
Very good.
So you could very well mount something like just underneath your rooftop, your overhang, that might propagate the signal enough for you to, not only put it to, guest house, but maybe, on your property. And of course, securing it with, encryption and stuff, you can do all that.
Good. Yep. Also, I have a fairly 2-year-old computer, very up to date, Windows 7, that I bought Microsoft Store, and it came with antivirus software, and I've continued to use that. I don't think I have a virus, but it seems to be slowing down. Do you recommend that I basically buy a proprietary
Before you cut the umbilical cord, always make sure you download or subscribe to something else. I know people have had pretty good luck with Avast, AVG, the free versions. The biggest thing is if you you decide to cut one off and start another, always make sure you have the other one ready to go in place, and you need to uninstall the first one because it's always going to create roadblocks for you to put something else that's going to do security as well. And I usually make sure I do a clean reboot. In other words, I do an uninstall of the first product and reboot the machine to make sure that the uninstall has been acknowledged by the system versus it just, kind of it's been uninstalled, but it really hasn't been rebooted, so things haven't been reset to the best.
Yeah, so uninstall, reboot.
Yep.
There you go. Thanks, John.
Good luck.
Good luck. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. Linda in Eau Claire, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry and Peter. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
It came at a very good time. Today, I tried to log on to my computer, and whether I use the fingerprint method or the password method, I'm getting a message that says the user profile service failed to log on. User profile cannot be loaded.
Hmm. Did you shut the machine off and turn it back on again?
Oh, I did. Unplugged it, shut it down a couple of times.
That's what usually works for me.
So it's having a problem with your profile. It's not telling you that it's got a problem with your password or your security.
So what?
Read the message again.
Okay, it says exactly. And it says service twice in a row. It says the user profile service mm-hmm. failed the logon. User profile cannot be loaded.
Hmm.
And it's the first time I've ever encountered anything like this. I'm running Windows 7 mm-hmm. Home Premium. The computer's only a couple of years old. It's mm-hmm. a laptop.
I have seen a case, and I've worked with it, where a user profile got corrupted and wouldn't allow the user to get in. And basically, you have to reset the password, and there are utilities to do that. And then you can go in and transfer the original user profile to a new one to, retain as much as you can from that. Sometimes people have little hiccups, little mental, burps in terms of trying to log on to their system. So you need to be absolutely positive before you start seeking help. I personally have had those moments where, you think you're typing it in right and, or using your fingerprint and, maybe you're off a little bit. So before you start seeking, help to, do a reset and then moving the old profile to a new profile.
Make sure you've got it right.
Yeah. The other thing is as far as dealing with that error message or the feedback message that you're getting, I would type that in and see what there might be some assistance online from some Google answers that, some research online that you might get, because your system might have applied a recent update and it caused that. And I would not be surprised if that happened. That's a possibility.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Well, obviously you have to use someone else's computer to do that, since I can't get on my own.
Yeah. There are utilities to do what I mentioned as far as resetting the password. I have them on my website, which is infostar.com. And then if you go to the Virus Info Center page, there are there's an area where it says utilities, and I believe one of them is like eRunt or Emergency Boot CD, EBCD. So if you see the links for that, that's how to actually get those, where you can download them. So you'd have to use another computer, download the files and actually burn a CD that you would then put in your computer. When you turn it on, you would say you wanted to, it's usually hit any key and you would boot off of the CD, and then it would come up with a menu, and one of them would be to reset the password on your system. And it basically resets it to nothing. So you have to do is just, click and then you're in.
Okay, I will try that. Thank you so much.
Yep, yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it.
I carry a bag around with stuff like that, Larry.
Oh, man. Alex, Facebook question. What is a good size and speed for a tablet? Any suggestions for a tablet that runs well and is cheaper than an iPad or Galaxy?
I know a lot of people like the Samsung products. I guess, in terms of speed of tablets and size, it's usually speed, size, storage, Wi-Fi access. The original iPad was sold in two formats. One was Wi-Fi capable, and then the other one was Wi-Fi service.
Yeah.
So you had to subscribe to the Wi-Fi service, and you could get it wherever you were traveling, wherever you were. The other one is you had to be within reach of Wi-Fi access point, and then you had to have access to that Wi-Fi service, and you could, you know, log into it and use Wi-Fi on yours. And I know, I believe you have one where you have can have the Wi-Fi service.
Yeah.
Mine is Wi-Fi access.
I have one with both. I have two, one with one and one with the other.
Okay. All right. So, you know, in terms of looking at tablets, you really need to, you know, make some determinations, decisions. Do you want the Wi-Fi access or do you want the Wi-Fi service? Because that'll weed out some tablets, and it will also be a lower cost if all you want is Wi-Fi access. The other feature that's going to add cost is storage, whether or not you want 16, 32, 48, 64, or more storage capacity, or looking at a tablet that has a base amount but can be expanded by adding on, and that'll typically be somebody other than like an iPad, something other than an iPad, because they build it in and don't allow you to expand. So your decision has to be made up front as far as an iPad would be, you know, how much storage you want. I found for my needs 16 is fine. I really haven't pressed it, but, you know, you can go a lot higher. It's got to pay for it.
Yeah,
and as far as speed, you know, the latest models are always going to have the faster chips out there, the better resolution screen. So, again, you know, how fast does it really need to be for you, and how high a resolution screen do you want? So you have to take a look at that as comparison. All those things add costs. And then, of course, the size. You know, they, you know, 10-inch, 9-inch, 7-inch. And like I said, the Samsung smartphones, you know, are almost like iPad killers because the tablet size is just big enough where you can use it as a smaller tablet. So there are a lot of things to weigh in your decision. And, you know, if price is the issue, you probably might find some Cyber Monday deals on some of those sites like, well, you might want to check Amazon, probably buy.com, tiger.com. CompUSA used to be popular, and they were bought out, but their site is still live, and products are posted on that. And then check with some of the other retailers out there like Staples, Office Depot, Best Buy. You know, they're all going to have deals on it. So, and then in terms of reviews and feedback, you know, check the sites and what the users say, but you can also go to some of the sites like Engadget and CNET. That'll post reviews of the products out there. And then if it's a very new product, then you're probably out of luck in terms of looking at a lot of reviews. And then it boils down to a personal decision.
There you go. We have lots of callers online, lots of Facebook questions as well. Here's another one from Michael in New Berlin. Can you explain the differences between Android OS app repositories? We use four tablets. Two use GetJar and two use Google Play. Of the two that use Google Play, one appears to be able to use the whole library and the other can't do this. Do you know if this is a licensing issue or what else it might be?
It sounds to me like it might be an OS version issue because they've made upgrades or changes to the OS. Android was purchased by Google. And it's part of a lot of tablets and, of course, the phones, because they also purchased Motorola. So Motorola smartphones will have that. And Samsung uses Android. So it's an open OS, but, the features are going to be dependent upon what version you're at. And I remember getting a tablet that had an older version of the Android OS, and the touchscreen did not work very well.
Yeah.
And it becomes a function of how good is the software and how you can upgrade to it.
John in Oshkosh emailed and wondered about Mac Keeper. Is it worth the investment?
Mac Keeper.
I'm trying to think of what Mac Keeper. I don't know Keeper.
You know, I've heard of that, and I'm wondering if that's like a, is that a antivirus application for the Mac?
I wonder if it isn't. I bet it is.
Yeah, I think.
I
have not invested in one on my
Judith Macs. Says it's a system care program.
Yeah, I have not. You know, it's kind of like if you with a Mac, you can just, you know, delete what you don't need, get rid of programs you're not using. You don't get the infiltration of all the other stuff that typically seems to happen with the Windows system. for me personally, I haven't seen a need for something. You know, if you compare it to like something like C Cleaner on Windows, is there a C Cleaner for the Mac? I really don't feel like I need to use something like that on a Mac.
Yeah, there you go. Denise in Lamira, hi there.
Hi there. My question is, seeing the commercial for the tablet and laptop combined, would that be good for a computer for kids?
So are you referring to the Surface by Microsoft, where it's...
I think that's it, yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, what they've done is they integrated, they felt that, you know, from a user standpoint, that integrating a keyboard interface would be a good thing. So it's kind of like their cover for the tablet, and then you get to use it as a keyboard. So if you really, feel like you're keyboard dependent, you want to have that with you, it works well. For other tablets, you can add a Bluetooth keyboard. So... You know, from a price standpoint, a Bluetooth keyboard might run, let's say, we'll pick middle of the road, something like $79, but it may not necessarily be part of the case. So let's say we put it in a $100 cost price point. Then you look at the rest of the tablet. So I believe a Surface is maybe in the $499 price range with the cover and the keyboard. So what are you getting for the tablet part? So if you subtract $100 and then you use that as a comparison. And then the other thing to look at is it's Windows versus what the other tablets are using, which might be Android OS or Apple's, iOS for their system.
Right. So should we maybe just get a tablet? This would be only the third computer I've ever bought in like 20 years.
How old? So, and you're looking at sharing it with your kids, your family?
Yeah, and yep, and they're in middle school now. So.
Be careful now because you may not get it back.
Yeah.
I know. Well, we still have our desktop. That would be like for the old people.
Yeah. You know, how old are your kids?
Eighth grade and fifth.
Eighth grade and fifth.
I've got a fifth grader at home. I never get my iPad anymore.
Right. That's fine. Like I said.
Well, you know, let's take a couple of perspectives of this. One is looking at maybe just getting, go to some of the sites that I stated online and look at some of the reviews. Look at, go put in tablet and look and see what you get back at all the different price points. And you'll probably see stuff all over the place from, let's say maybe even less than $100 to over $1,000 because tablets come in all different form factors. Okay. But pick something that is fairly reasonable and look at the reviews of it and decide if some of the features of that tablet will work for what you want. But where I'm getting at is, in Larry's household, he's probably weaned his daughter on, the good, user ethics of working with the tablet. And I know in some environments, giving the responsibility of having what I would consider an expensive tablet, and I'm going to say $400 or $500, is it needs some care and a little bit of loving to survive.
Yep.
And if it's not kept in a comfortable user environment, and it's thrown down on the bed, and then the kids decide, hey, I'm going to plop down or jump on the bed, and all of a sudden you get a cracked screen, then you better be a subscriber to one of those warranty things that says, if you crack your screen, you can bring it in, and no questions asked. So I'm just saying you may want to take a look at, a range of tablet in certain price points, see what the user reviews are, see what things you can do with them, and maybe get a less expensive one initially, test the waters with it, and, see how it goes, and then say, okay, maybe in 6 months we'll get another one, and that way you can spread the love with your tablet.
and you'll
have one to use for yourself sometime because it will go away.
Yeah, it's definitely. Denise, thanks a lot for calling. Peter Green of InfoStar.com. Our guest, I'm Larry Mueller, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Peter Green of InfoStar.com, talking about your computer and software. I hope you'll join us. The number 1-800-642-1234 email at talk@WPR.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Paul in Cascade, thank you for calling. Hi.
Good morning.
Hi.
Peter, my question is about external hard drives and the information stored on them. I heard on another program this morning, they have a useful life, the information has a useful life of 3 to 5 years on average before it disintegrates or becomes illegible or anything. Is there any truth to that?
The devices have what are called mean time between failures, and they rate them pretty high with hundreds of thousands of hours. Realistically, they could go tomorrow. They could go, you know, they could continue to spin and operate for 20 years. Some of the solid-state devices, they don't have any moving parts, but I've seen reliability issues with them. Same thing with DVDs if they're not kept, or CDs if they're not kept in user-friendly environments and exposed to the elements, and dust can cause wear on the surface. You can have issues. I remember reading something years ago about, you know, projecting in the future of thinking, do you think there's going to be a Windows 95 computer out there that's going to allow you to read your data from your, you know, and how many years forward, you know, 20 years, 30 years, and so forth. So, you know, moving things forward that you really want to keep, that 3 to 5 year plan is probably, or time frame is probably a pretty good estimate of where you should be in terms of moving things forward. You know, moving it to a newer media for backup so that you have access to it. And again, the operating systems, the devices that we use are in continual flux. And here we are today talking about, you know, a lot of people calling in about tablets. And would we have had this discussion, you know, even 2 years ago?
No.
So smartphones also a lot within the last couple of years, more so than before. So technology is a constant state of flux, and your data should be treated with respect in terms of allowing you to enjoy it down the road. But you shouldn't just, you know, shelve it and put it away and think that it's going to be there in 10, 20 years. You should continually revisit it and see if you have access to it.
This yep. man suggested using another backup device, the thumb drive, mm-hmm. in addition to the external hard drive.
Sure, that's the thumb drive is a solid state. It's the same thing, but again, it's not without you know, having issues in terms of, you know, where it's kept, they're more fragile typically in terms of their cases. They're very light. They're made out of plastic, maybe a little bit of metal. They're probably more susceptible to being crushed and also probably more susceptible to being lost.
We use them in a class, a broadcast class that I teach. Everybody gets one at the start of the semester, and it's amazing how many problems develop.
There you go.
That's, I mean, there's at least, it seems like 5% at least, maybe 10%.
I have some I carry with me, and I'm like, I don't know why I still carry them, because I know they have problems, and I feel bad about throwing them away.
Is there a backup medium that's better than an external hard drive?
As far as speed and accessibility and capacity and the most bang for the buck, it's probably going to be your, you know, a good, reliable spinning hard drive that's made by one of the, you know, major manufacturers that's out there. And
this one is Western Digital.
Yeah, Western Digital, Seagate. There are some others. You can check the models and look at the reviews and see what people say about them. There are a variety of different sizes and different access speeds. Again, the access speeds also can be dependent upon what kind of interface you use with your computer system.
Yeah.
So whether it's FireWire or USB, and also if it was to be hooked up with some of the external SATA ports as well.
Yeah. Good luck. Thanks for calling, Paul. Appreciate it. I want to give Steve a chance in Plover. Hi, Steve. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Good morning. I'd like to ask about this particularly malicious malware I've heard about called CryptoLocker.
Okay.
And from what I understand, even typical antivirus or malware programs aren't really able to detect it. And so I guess I'm wondering, do you have any recommendations for that, for protecting against that?
Probably, you know, if it's been, you know, I think I've heard of that one, and there, I believe the major ones are probably going to have it incorporated either in their antivirus tools, or they may, sometimes they even make independent tools that stand by themselves where you can download them to, you know, see if you can detect it on your system. For example, Microsoft, usually on a monthly basis, creates a malicious tool download that you can actually download from their site and then run it on your system, and it'll go through and check for all of the major ones that they've added to their program. So, you know, if you're running a Windows system, you can easily do a search on that and, you know, look up malicious tool, Microsoft Windows, and put in CryptLocker and see if it comes up.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, Steve. Dick in Montfort, hi. Thank you for calling.
Oh, well, I have an Asus computer, netbook.
Okay.
And a while back, the keyboard went funny on me in that the keyboard that's part of the netbook doesn't work the way it should. Some of the letters are the same, but the other letters are different, and it's not a useful set.
Okay.
I'm using an attached through the USB port other keyboard, and that works. But this happened to me once before, and somehow I hit a combination of keys and got it back again. But this time I can't seem to find the combination, or I don't know what's wrong.
Okay. A couple of things I'd recommend. One is you could probably call them and ask them if they could, you know, make any recommendations how you could troubleshoot it, you know, work with you on that. The other one is go online to and do a Google search, but maybe even a YouTube search, and see if there are any tutorials or videos online about either maybe detaching and cleaning your keyboard and seeing if that might help. Because sometimes simply detaching and reattaching it might make the connectivity work. The other
built-in keyboard. I don't see how I would detach that.
Okay. You'd be surprised. You know, it got in there somehow. You might want to see if there's a way to, you know, call up the company and see if there is a way for you to service it yourself. And then, you know, you say it's like built in, but it actually comes apart. And there is a way to access the actual keyboard, because when they put all those keys in, they may be individually put on a piece, or it might actually be a keyboard that just looks like it's individual pieces, but from underneath it's one complete component. And it can be a part that might be able to be switched out, and you might actually figure out how to take it apart, get that keyboard, if it's bad, out of there, and it might be a part that might be available on eBay, because I know they sell parts to replace screens and things for tablets and smartphones and computers, and I buy power supplies off of eBay all the time for $20 for a desktop PC, where you'd probably go to a store and spend, you know, at least double, if not four times the amount.
Yeah, there you go. Good luck, Dick. Thanks. Ken in Oconomowoc, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I have a question about, it's called an iPod 5th generation, I believe. My 11-year-old son wants one for Christmas, and I was wondering if he really needs one that expensive.
Well, the iPod's got, you know, it's got camera, it's going to have Wi-Fi access, it'll have storage capacity for music, it'll allow him to do texting, have all the features of, like, a smartphone without the phone feature. Without the phone itself. So it boils down to...
Can I get him something cheaper that's still going to work for him?
You can look... Well, there are a wide range of iPod devices. So, you know, you're looking at the latest and greatest. You may want to take a step back and look at some of the earlier generation ones that they still do sell. but they're just not as don't have as much storage, or they might not be as small, or they might have not have the same color selection.
So for $100, you can get the phone, the iPhone.
Well, which, but it comes with a.
But you don't have to hook the phone up.
Right, but you have a service agreement that you have to do when.
Well,
you buy
how many gigabytes would be sufficient? Do you think? 32?
You know, 32 is a pretty good number, you know, for a smartphone. Some people will probably argue that that's not enough for storing a lot of music and videos, where you can get the iPods where, you know, 100, 200 plus gigabytes of storage, but they get, you know, you get pricey with, you know, how much you got to pay for them.
Yeah.
So,
okay. Yeah. Alrighty.
You know, you might want to get one that just gives them a little taste of it and... you know, tell him to save his start working and saving his pennies.
Yeah, there you go.
That's what they used to tell me. Now it's save your dollars.
We were thinking about an iPhone for Emily, but not one of those $100 ones, but then not hooking the phone part of it up and just use everything else. I mean, you can do everything else.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's another, and that's $100.
Yeah.
One way to look at it, Peter Green of InfoStar.com, our guest today. He'll be with us right up until 12:30. We're going to take a look at the news and weather and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net. Then we'll be back with Pete. You know, sometimes technology gets a bad rap. Like so many things, when it's working well, you don't really notice it. But when it isn't, then you really notice it. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network. Peter Green, our guest today, he's an independent computer consultant, happy to help you with your computer problems. And Peter, thanks again for spending time with us today. Appreciate it.
Always great, Larry.
And you, every time you're on, you have a list of, a top 10 list of great places to visit, sites to visit. And what have you got for us today?
I know you like the first one, but I'll tell them where to find. If you go to infostar.com, the top left, if you... go to Top 10 Archives and scroll down to today's date. It's there. And if you click on also the current Top 10, you go to that link, too. I know I got to fix the date at the top of the current Top 10, but the archive one's already been fixed. The first one is called worldgolf.com, and it's a golfing resource that includes golf courses of the world.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
So if you're traveling, you can, I guess, probably pre-look and pre-book if you want.
Yeah.
Number two is if you're interested in a different kind of spin on news and info, it's called rantlifestyle.com, R-A-N-T, and then lifestyle.com.
Mm-hmm.
If you use Photoshop, which is very popular, this site offers tutorials and training on the popular program Photoshop. A lot of stuff there. It's called photoshopessentials.com. If you are into e-commerce and you don't know about this, this is the stuff that goes, this is the language that's typically used behind the scenes, and it's called CXML.org, and it's a commerce extensible markup language, much like HTML is used for worldwide web pages. Number five is called TripBase, TripBase.com, and it's another useful travel resource to know with flights, air travel, hotel, cars, vacations, and so forth. The next one is a updated technology and news resource, including its own IT forum and jobs listing area, and it's called arstechnica.com. And if you're into gaming, this site is called cheatcodes.com. And you might say, well, what are cheat codes? Well, I put an FYI. For your information, cheat codes are shortcuts into playing video games. And this is my definition.
Yeah.
So I didn't copy this. This is mine. Cheat codes are shortcuts into playing video games to get past levels or how to advance quickly by passing sticking points where you get ousted. In other words, that you are either been put out by the game or made dead because you got killed too many times and so forth. So these are ways around those sticking points. And they make books on this stuff, but there are also websites that have this information. Number eight is called usindoor.com, and it was founded in 1998, and it's basically a resource that covers indoor facilities for multiple sports such as soccer, volleyball, football, lacrosse, hockey, dodgeball, and on and on. And, you know, Madison and surrounding area has a lot of those facilities, and they would typically be found on this. Number nine is a different charitable way to sell or buy online items online through their online classified site, and it's called gift-it.com. And number 10, if you are into website design and you want to know more about, or if you want to know more about it, you'll enjoy this resource, and it's called instantshift.com. There's a lot of neat things to check out.
And all, of course, up on your infostar.com site.
Yep.
Upper left corner.
And I don't endorse any of these. I just, you know, it's like, hey, you might want to check them out. I happen to be out there surfing on different subjects and found them useful and enlightening and just might help somebody.
I got to go to that worldgolf.com. Put that one up. Mm-hmm. Pete, we've got lots of callers. Fred in Minong has a question for you. Let's go to him. Fred, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for having the program. Very interesting. I'm learning a lot.
Thanks.
I have a problem where I have a window. Actually, I've got three questions, and you can attack them as you will and comment. I have Windows 7 for the first time. I had XP for years, and I just loved it. But ever since I've had this new computer I bought a couple of months ago, every time I shut it down, I get the do not unplug your computer. We're updating one of six. And I can let it update the one of six and let it shut down by itself, turn it back on, turn it back off. Same thing again. Every single time I shut it down, I get this window and it's updating one of six. And I'm sure that it's not really doing it. It's just as though it updates it and then doesn't recognize that it's already done it or something. And my second program is I belong to a club where I buy games. I do a lot of games, like hidden object games and things like that. And my wife and I'm 78 years old, and my wife and I like those kinds of things. And I'm a member of a club for some years, and I got a couple of hundred games I've bought on there that I can download once again, being I purchased them, anytime I want to. Now, since I've gotten Windows 7 and I go in there, I get all of these lines across the bottom. You know, it says... Your browser has failed to accept this. Do you want to allow this? Click here for options, so on and so forth. And I'll go through the routine, and many times, 50% or more, I'll get a little window that pops up and it says, failed to redirect. And I can never get around to, at that point in time, maybe I'll try it the next day and it'll go through with no problem whatsoever. And I've written quite a few programs in QBasic, which ran in XP, but I absolutely can't run them on Windows 7, and I was wondering if there's any possibility that there's a way that they could be made to run. I guess that's my list.
Okay. Well, the last one with running stuff with QBasic, you probably want to do a little online search and see what you need to add to your Windows 7 to allow you to support QBasic on your system. It might be something as simple as running it in a compatibility window on your computer.
Yeah.
It might be something just as simple as that, or it might be that you need an interpreter to be added to your Windows operating system, and then it allow you to run it. So I would do a little bit of research on that with just doing like a Google or whatever your favorite search engine is and search on that. It sounds like, you know, with the redirect error and the questions you keep getting asked, that your security might be set pretty high with the browser that you're using. So what you may want to do is ease up on your security settings if you're using Internet Explorer or using Firefox. And since you said the computer is a couple of months old, I would recommend that you download at least another web browser, maybe even two, so something like Google Chrome or Safari or Firefox if you only have Internet Explorer on your system. And also you want to make sure that Internet Explorer is updated to the latest version because that may have some effect on some of the games that you're downloading and wanting to use. And then as far as the updates, you may want to go into the control panel and click on Windows Updates, and you may want to actually go and get them, you know, act on them and go and get them while you're on the system and apply them and not have it do it when you're shutting down and see how the computer reacts, because it sounds like it's not actually completing an update cycle. And I think that you need to make sure that your system's on and then you're actively attending to it and watching it and see it get through it and not having it do the act of shutting down to make sure that it completes it.
There might be
some airing out and it's not doing it, and you need to see what's going on.
Yeah, there you go. Good luck.
And
thanks.
That's through the control panel and just going and grabbing Windows updates and letting it do it.
Letting it do it, you bet. Good luck. Thank you. We had an email from Stu, a suggestion for those callers who may be lusting after Apple products but shuddering at the supposed premium prices. I've always purchased from the Apple online store refurbished section. Never had any problem with the products, from iPods to iPads to iMacs. Many times the product is new, but a clearance item. Other times it's a return to Apple. In any case, items have come with the same one-year warranty and the standard option to purchase an AppleCare extended warranty. You'll find older generations products at significant discounts. Recently, I saw an iPad mini. Normally, it's $499 for $249. Free shipping from Apple. Their supply changes frequently, so if you don't find what you want today, check back next week.
Mm-hmm.
So all good things.
I'll expand a little bit on that, and we've talked about this over the years. And it's not just Apple. It's a lot of other companies. It's even the retailers that do that, and they'll call them open box. But some of them will call them factory refurbs. And what happens is the products are returned to the retailer, and either they recertify it, and they're allowed to do that from the manufacturer, or they have to send them back to the manufacturer, and they have to get reboxed and recertified and cleaned up. And they come with the same warranties, and they're brand new, but they've been opened and touched by somebody else. So, you know, that whole thing is to your benefit if you're able to, you know, you're okay with that. And you can save a lot of money. And it's not just Apple products, but it's across the board. So, you know, an open box item or a factory recert means that, you know, maybe somebody did have a problem with it and it got sent back and it was under warranty, and what they simply did was they replaced the bad part, recertified it, and they're giving it a new warranty, you know, to cover it, and you're saving $100, $200, $300, maybe getting it at half price because they want to move the products out.
Yeah, that's
or they figured out
a really good deal,
or they figured out the problem with the product and they've corrected it. And you're the beneficiary of the fact that it took them a while to figure out what was really wrong and why the units were coming back. But now you're getting something that's fixed and works well.
Well, very good point. Dale in La Crosse. Hi, thanks for calling.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I have cookies on my email, and they're not chocolate chip.
No.
They're spam, and I can't seem to get rid of them. They go to the junk file. I delete them from junk file, and then they go to trash, and I delete them from there, and they're gone, but they appear the next day.
It sounds to me, well, you can either try and block the sender, and, you know, they, but if they change, you know, they'll, some of these senders get smart and cute and change where they're coming from, so they've got your email, and they realize that it's no longer being received, and they'll change it. But you can try blocking the sender and seeing if that'll help. But you're doing the right thing in terms of it's in the junk, and then you're deleting it in the trash. Then it's really it's gone off your system.
Okay.
The other thing is you might want to check with your internet service provider, and they might have a pre-filter that you would be allowed to have access to and set up and test and see if it filters out your spam before you actually get it to your computer, so that might cut down on the spam. I know a lot of internet service providers have added that feature. You just have to know to turn it on. So it might be just something as simple as a phone call and asking if they have it and if it's turned on or not.
But I wouldn't go into the files where all the cookies are listed and try to find them and get rid of them there?
Correct.
Yep.
It would... So like I'm saying, your service provider might be a good place to start with to help you cut down on that.
All right.
Good luck. Thanks, Dale. Gary in Green Bay. Hello.
Yeah, I just bought a Mac Mini a while back just to get away from all that viral stuff that floats around out there. So far, so good. But I've got two little problems here. The iPhoto, the other day I was doing something, pushed the wrong button, put all my photos into the trash for iPhoto. I don't know how to get them back out. They're there. And the second question is, you take these things, pictures through iPhoto. It has this gigantic center field. You can move these into folders if you want. But if you clean out your center field by deleting, you delete your folders too. It's just not like Microsoft. So what is the answer? They don't give you an instruction book of this thing either. What do we do?
So what's that last part of moving your folders?
If you get, as you take your pictures, they all go into iPhoto center field.
Okay.
And you can move them, sweep them into folders if you want.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to clean out your center field, it'll clean out your folders too.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Mm. It doesn't hardly make sense.
I typically copy things, you know, before I move them. So I always have a backup in case I goofed where I put it or, you know, I know that I have another thing to go back to. It might be an option that you have to turn off in terms of, you know, I know with Apple there are different triggers or trips with, you know, with backups and deleting things and moving things. You might want to check and see if there are any options in the iPhoto for managing your pictures as related to, you know, what you said and deleting that one.
Yeah.
I can't believe that that would be an automatic. I got to believe that you could reset that so you wouldn't lose the folders.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But like I said, I would highlight them, and you can use the shortcut. Option, was it option C and option V, you know, for cutting and copying and pasting into new folders so that you at least still have the original copy as well as a new copy.
With the button that I pushed to get them all into the trash can somehow, how do I pull them back out?
You can just move. You should be able to just move them back out to wherever you want.
Well, there's 10,000 of them. They all went in there at once.
Well, you would have to pick and choose if you have that many.
Oh, wow. Man.
You know, unless they're organized in folders.
No, they're not.
Oh, man. You got to highlight the whole works and...
Yeah.
You'd have to highlight the whole works and send them.
One at a time?
No,
you can do the whole...
Well, you can do them in groups if you want.
Yeah.
And then just send, you know, create a new folder where you know where it is and then just, you know, send or copy them to, you know, move them to it.
Yeah, that'd be the way to do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you wouldn't want to try and do them all at once anyway.
Sometimes when you do things all at once, you can create other issues, too. It depends on, you know, we don't know the amount of space that's on your system and how, you know, the size of the files and all that, because you can, you know, make the thing stand on its head for a while, and then you're wondering, is it really working? So doing it in smaller groups is probably the better way to do it.
Yep. Good luck. George in Trempealeau County. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
I've never had a computer. I'm kind of behind times. I'm in the late 60s, but I was thinking about buying an iPad, not a pod. And do I have to have a computer to buy that? And if I do buy an iPad, what's in it and what do I learn from it and what can I do with it?
Great questions. The iPad in itself is a computer, so you don't need another computer.
Okay.
But in order to do certain things, you know, like what we talk about, you know, people being able to send and receive email or going online and looking at websites to buy or shop or look for information on cars, clothing, sporting goods, travel, and things like that, you would need to have internet access. So we mentioned earlier there are iPads that come with internet access, and you would have to pay for a monthly fee to have that, or there are iPads that have access to what's called a Wi-Fi hotspot. So if you don't have internet access, you would want to check with wherever you bought the iPad from to see if, based on your address and your location, that you could get Wi-Fi service with the iPad. So you would, you know, pay for the iPad itself, and then you would have a separate monthly fee for the internet access.
Okay, that might get kind of expensive. I don't know.
It might. Well, To be honest with you, I know what it costs is usually an add-on. I don't know what it costs as a standalone. So
but
you'll
the
just
iPad,
have.
The iPad, does it come like with a battery, so you can just kind of?
It comes
stuff, or do you got to have that internet thing?
It actually it comes with its own little power adapter and cord that you plug it in, and okay. It charges. And the battery life depends on how much you use it and have it on. So it could last for hours and hours. Or, if you use it, charge it real quick and it doesn't have a lot of staying power and then you use it again, you'll be recharging it. So, there'll be a little bit of downtime, but generally speaking, people watch movies on it, listen to music.
And you can have it, you can be watching it while we've got it plugged in. So,
yeah, yep.
I don't have internet or cable TV or any of that stuff.
Right.
I know I'm behind the times, but.
So you'll have a little fun trying to do some catch up if you're interested. But like I said, you'll have to check and see what the Wi-Fi access would cost on a monthly basis. It might be something where they would be willing to sign you up for $20, or it might cost more than that. I honestly do not know as a standalone.
Yeah, okay. It's probably not going to be less than $20.
Yeah,
I'd be surprised if it was less. So at least $20, probably.
Mm-hmm.
But good luck, George. You ought to do it. If you can, I hope you can do it. You know, one of the things you can do, you're in Trempealeau County. Go down to your library. I don't know if you've used. Go to your library and try out the. I'm sure they'll have iPads there. They'll have other types of machines there as well. Give them a try. See what you know. See, kind of. Test drive them a little bit, and see how they work, and see if you're going to like them, and you might decide that something other than an iPad would work better for you. You never know, do you, Pete?
Never know, and it's definitely worth going to the library there.
Absolutely, we got maybe a minute or so left. Is there a way to remove the password entry on Windows 7.1? I was locked out and had to use F1 key and was fortunate enough to be able to use the system restore that way. I would like to remove the password completely.
Oh, you mean so that when you just log in, you don't even see it? You can shut that off. You just remove the password from your user account, and then your system will just come up to your desktop.
Yeah,
that's all you have to do. Go on the control panel. And then change that setting under user accounts.
And some people have their password is nothing.
You can have that too.
You can just go on and
just change it to nothing.
Just change it to nothing.
But you'll have the user come up. If you don't want the user come up, then just remove the password, and then it's just going to come up to your desktop.
Mm-hmm. But if you want to kind of like people might try to resolve what your password is and keep typing things in, and it's really nothing.
Yeah. The other thing is setting the screensaver so it comes on to a password, and then you can time that, whether it comes up in 1 minute or 5 minutes or 20 minutes.
Yeah.
I know in office environments, that's, some offices require that so that no one else can... there's no security breaches.
Pete, always a pleasure. Thanks so much. Appreciate it. We'll see you in January.
Yep.
See you next year.
Yep. Happy New Year.
All right. Peter Green of Infostar.com. Our guest, he'll be back in January, and we'll do this all over again with him. Michael Perry joins me tomorrow to talk about his latest book, From the Top, Brief Transmission from the Tent Show Radio. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.